Hello, this is Todd Durakon with the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, May 20th, 2025, coming to you from my home studio. We start on the front page, Together Decatur, Johnson keeps Forsyth at heart. Retiring village trustee, former mayor, looks back on 28 years of civil service. This article is by Donette Beckett, Forsyth. For Marilyn Johnson, bringing people together is important in whatever job she has. After 28 years, Johnson retired this month from service to the village of Forsyth. That included time as a member of its board and as its only female mayor. But she can't seem to stay away from helping her community. I enjoy the people, said Johnson, who is 83 years old, and I did what was best for the village of Forsyth. Johnson continues to work as one of the faces greeting diners at Red Lobster, located, of course, in Forsyth. She's been doing that for the past 14 years. Her manager has to field questions when Johnson has a day off. If she's not here, they ask, where's Marilyn at today, said Holly Fry, Red Lobster's general manager. Johnson's time as mayor was just another step in taking care of her community. It's what happens in your local government, Johnson said, as an example of how to get involved. People aren't getting involved like they should. Johnson got active with the community government side of things by serving as a member of the Activities and Events Committee. I was just one of the helpers. There, she said. Johnson and her family moved to Forsyth more than 55 years ago. Her determination and appreciation for the village was evident to board members early on, motivating one of them to suggest she run for election. She won a seat on the board in 1997. 15 years later, she was elected mayor. It was really a challenge because the gentleman that was running against me was very accomplished and he was more on the internet to people, Johnson said. Nobody said, now Marilyn, your age is against you. Johnson instead took the classic route and knocked on doors to meet the voters. A move that may have helped her win the election. The gentleman that ran against me, Eric Moore, came up and hugged me, Johnson said. She served as mayor for 8 years before returning to the board as a trustee. I am retired now, Johnson said after deciding not to run for re-election this year. During her terms on the village board, Johnson said keeping video gaming out of the village was important. I worked very hard on it, she said. Johnson said parents often contacted her, voicing their opinions about the machines found in restaurants in other communities. I think we're pretty sold on it, she said about the future without gambling. The village was able to add to the parks while Johnson was mayor. Other village goals include the family fest and senior meals. But to my disappointment, we still don't have that, she said about the addition of a community center. But we did so many things. Johnson said her favorite part of the job included helping senior citizens. When some of these little older people need help, I always enjoyed solving those problems, she said. To continue her love of helping others, Johnson has kept her job as a hostess at Red Lobster. 15 years ago, Johnson and her family operated Prairie Greenhouse before they retired. I was home for about a year and couldn't sit still, she said, so I went to Red Lobster, and I'm still there. According to Fry, Johnson is an asset to the restaurant. Her humor is appealing to customers, the manager said. She is very customer service, Fry said. She usually goes over and beyond taking care of guests to make sure they are getting the best customer service. Current Forsyth Mayor Jim Peck was elected after Johnson decided not to run. She's been involved in our city government for 28 years, Peck said. She just really cares so much for that community. For Johnson, the older areas of Forsyth were just as important as the new parts of Forsyth, Peck noted. She had a great representation of our village when she was around for 28 years, Peck said. She left this place a lot better than the way she found it. Johnson's example has been a motivation for the current mayor as well as others who meet her. Everybody needs to care more about the community that they live in and give back when we can, Peck said. And there's a series of medium-sized color photos here. Former Forsyth Mayor Marilyn Johnson works as a hostess while General Manager Holly Fry looks on adoringly at Red Lobster in Forsyth on Thursday, May 15th. And they're standing at the hostess stand. Former Mayor Johnson in a gray sweater and a dark shirt underneath, smiling, has an Apple earbud in. And Johnson is standing behind her at the hostess station. We see some menus and some rolled silverware by the computer and phone. Joseph Ressler photos, Herald and Review, and we see former Mayor Johnson seating a customer and former Mayor Johnson greeting a customer, holding two rolled flatware sets and two menus. And the large color photo that starts the article is just a variation on the theme of the first one that I referenced, but we see more of the restaurant in the background, out of focus. But I'll read the caption. Former Forsyth Mayor Marilyn Johnson works as a hostess at Red Lobster in Forsyth on Thursday, May 15th. Johnson decided not to seek re-election to the village board this year, bringing to a close nearly 30 years of government service to the community. Again, Joseph Ressler, Herald and Review, photo credit. And the sidebar here, hashtag Together Decatur. Do you know a person or of a story that exemplifies the best of Decatur? Well, if you do, contact Donette Beckett at 217-421-6983 or dbeckett at herald-review.com. Illinois DEI crackdown threatens scholarships. This article's by Addison Wright, Chicago Tribune. The Trump administration's crackdown on diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives threatens an Illinois program that provides scholarships to minority graduate students who agree to stay in the state and work in the education field. On March 31st, the U.S. Department of Justice notified universities participating in the Diversifying Higher Education in Illinois Scholarship and the Illinois Board of Higher Education, which disperses the scholarship funds, that the program, quote, unconstitutionally discriminates on the basis of race in violation of the 14th Amendment, according to an April 11th Department of Justice news release. After the Justice Department threatened to file suit, the state and six universities suspended the program, the DOJ release said, unquote. But Governor J.B. Pritzker, who including funding for the program in his February budget proposal, continues to support an expenditure for the scholarship as budget negotiations continue in Springfield, said Alex Goff, a spokesperson for the governor's office. A spokesperson for Attorney General Kwame Raoul's office declined to comment, citing an ongoing DOJ investigation of the scholarship program. The spokesperson did not respond to a request for details about the investigation. The DOJ did not return emailed requests for comment. Colleges and universities nationwide have been under fire from the administration of President Donald Trump for months on a number of fronts, among them DEI initiatives, which the administration has said disregard merit and divide Americans based on race. The DOJ cited a 2023 Supreme Court decision that effectively ended the use of race as a factor in university admissions to justify its decision that the Illinois scholarship program was unlawful. DOJ's statement on the program said the scholarship used, quote, race as a prerequisite for participation, specifically excluding students of some races but not others in violation of federal law, unquote. This Department of Justice is committed to rooting DEI out of American institutions, including in the education system, Attorney General Pamela Bondi said in the news release on the scholarship program. At an unrelated news conference last week, Raoul, without pointing specifically to the scholarship, said that while policies must be evaluated to make sure they're consistent with the law, it's also critically important for educational institutions to not succumb to fear. He said if they do, they become vulnerable to continued threats from the federal administration. It's important to double down on the type of policies that prevent discrimination in the workplace or at an educational institution in the first place and not to back away from those, Raoul said. I would say fight back. You can do the evaluation and continue to do and to embrace the tools that create a diverse and inclusive workplace. The Diversifying Education in Illinois Scholarship Program offers up to 4 years of need-based financial aid for minority students pursuing graduate degrees if the students agreed to accept a teaching or staff position at an Illinois higher education institution, governing board or education-related position in a state agency when they graduate or leave their school. The scholarship is open to Illinois residents who are members of a, quote, underrepresented group, including Black, Hispanic, and Asian American populations, unquote, according to the program's website. The program was created by a 2004 state law that was passed after an IBHE study found that, quote, the presence of students and faculty staff from various ethnic groups was very important in the decision of underrepresented students to stay in school, unquote. More than $2 million was appropriated in the state's budgets last year to fund scholarships at 14 universities in Illinois. A spokesperson for the Illinois Board of Higher Education said the remaining funds for the current year were dispersed to students following the DOJ threat. As the Board of Higher Education explained to the DOJ, there are no activities scheduled to take place over the next few months on Illinois' scholarship program, said Jose Garcia, an IBHE spokesperson. Illinois agreed to conduct an evaluation of the program and will consult with the General Assembly since this program is enshrined in Illinois law. State Representative LaShawn Ford, a Chicago Democrat, said he has been working with the IBHE and plans to support funding for the program going forward, but he said it won't include funding for private universities that withdrew from the program after the DOJ's threat. While IBHE said all remaining scholarship funds were dispersed, some private university students said they did not receive the last installment of their scholarship because their institution turned down the funds to stay in compliance with the DOJ. Spokespersons for several of the private universities, the DOJ said, dropped the scholarship program, referred questions to the IBHE. Moving on to A3, the local page, tree debris pickup starts on May 27th. Tony Reed, Decatur, has this article. Help is at hand for Decatur families left with yards full of tree debris after the storms on May 16th. The city of Decatur has announced it will conduct a community-wide tree debris cleanup for private properties beginning May 27th with work crews fanning out to pick up downed limbs and branches. But there are conditions. Trees and limbs must be cut so they are no longer than 8 feet. They must also be brought to the curb. No debris will be picked up from yards due to what the city says are liability issues. A news release from the city said residents wanting debris collected must schedule a visit by calling 217-875-4820 by Friday, May 23rd. And there are other important conditions, too. The news release warned, we will not, and not is capitalized, collect any other garbage or debris, such as parts of a fence or shed, building materials, etc., if these are on the tree and limb debris pile. None of the debris will be collected. The city also reminds residents that they have unlimited weekly yard waste collection as part of their basic trash service. Those with smaller debris are urged to use that service. Probation for woman after battery plea. Tony Reed, Decatur, has this article. The babysitter accused of beating a client mom so severely police said the victim's nose ended up shifted to the right has been sentenced to 30 months probation. Jamie L. Miller, 48, took a plea deal in Macon County Circuit Court that saw her admit to a charge of aggravated battery. Two other battery charges, including one alleging great bodily harm, were dismissed as part of the deal, along with a further charge of robbery. The defendant was also sentenced to 180 days in jail, but that was stayed by Judge Eric Hubbard. Miller has agreed to take part in the drug court program, which means she could emerge with a clean record if she follows the rules and treatment regimen required. The charges against Miller, who lists an address in Palmer, date to around 12 a.m. on November 24th, when police said she ambushed the then 37-year-old victim as she was getting into her car in a Decatur motel parking lot. A sworn affidavit quotes the victim as describing how her head was shoved into the car door, and after she fell to the ground, she was punched in the face approximately 20 times by Miller. Officers observed the victim's nose to be extremely swollen and shifted to the right, said Officer Jonathan Welton, who signed the affidavit. Jamie was telling the victim when she was hitting her that she owed Jamie money for babysitting. The victim said she paid Jamie and does not know what Jamie was talking about. Miller had also been accused of stealing $100 from the victim and scratching abusive words into the paintwork of the victim's car. Miller was sentenced when she appeared in court April 23rd. Her progress through drug court is subject to regular reviews and a check of the court record shows she has run into trouble on several occasions. At a May 2nd court appearance, Judge Hubbard sanctioned Miller to write an essay regarding scheduling and the importance of scheduling. And on May 16th, he sanctioned her to work 2 hours of community service after an unspecified rules infraction. Coroner, two people dead in fiery crash. Tony Reed, Neoga, this article. An updated report has now confirmed that two people were killed in Saturday morning's fiery crash between a passenger minivan and a semi-truck on Interstate 57 near Neoga. Josh Pointer, the chief deputy coroner for Cumberland County, said the crash claimed the lives of a 77-year-old man and a 72-year-old woman who were both in the van. Initial Illinois State Police reports had only listed one fatality. Pointer confirmed to the Herald and Review that the victims were both pronounced dead at the scene of the collision. The male was the driver of the semi-truck. The male driver of the semi-truck was treated in hospital and later released. Pointer said he expected the identities of the victims would be ready for release sometime Monday. He said efforts to finalize identification were hampered by burn damage that followed the crash. A state police news release said emergency services had been called to respond to the collision around 11:15 a.m. The van was described as crossing over from the southbound lanes of I-57 into the northbound lanes, where it struck the semi and became engulfed in flames. The exact circumstances of the crash remain under investigation. Police vehicle shot at with infant inside. Tony Reed, Decatur, has this article. Police are searching for a gunman after multiple shots were fired during a domestic dispute with several bullets struck a vehicle with an infant passenger. Sergeant Timothy Maxwell with the Decatur Police Department said the child escaped injury after, quote, at least three bullets hit the car, unquote. The violence happened just before 4 p.m. Thursday in the 1200 block of North Church Street. Maxwell said the 20-year-old mother of the child had earlier alerted police she was having a confrontation with her 27-year-old boyfriend, and so officers were on their way. And while they were en route, she called again and indicated someone from the neighborhood had shot and struck her vehicle while her infant child was inside the car, Maxwell added. He said the gunman had intervened. During the dispute between the couple, and a video shot at the time shows him exchanging words with the boyfriend. It looks like the suspect had said something like initially asking the mother what was going on, and then the boyfriend told him not to talk to my girl, Maxwell added. There was some more back and forth, and then the suspect pulled out a handgun and started shooting. One of the witnesses said that 10 shots were fired. Truck hits church. Three children are hurt. Ikram Mohammed, Chicago Tribune, Palos Park. Three children were being treated at Christ Hospital in Oaklawn Friday after the driver of a pickup truck crashed into a church in Palos Park early Friday evening, police said. According to Palos Park police, the driver was eastbound McCarthy Road shortly after 4:30 p.m. when he apparently suffered a medical emergency and veered off 123rd Street, crossed 86th Avenue, and into the parking lot of the Episcopal Church of the Transfiguration before crashing into the building. Police said investigators were with the families of three children at Christ Hospital in Oak Lawn who were being treated for their injuries. The driver of the pickup truck was taken to Palos Northwestern with Palos Park officers. Police said one church staff member suffered a medical emergency while the fire department was on scene, and she was taken to Palos Northwestern. Two Palos Park police officers were hospitalized for inhalation of smoke and construction debris while trying to get to the children inside the church, police said. Palos Park police and village staff are working with the church staff and other agencies during the active investigation. Business travel to U.S. drops. D.N. Durbin, Associated Press. Business travel to the U.S. fell 9% in April as companies and workers grappled with economic uncertainty and anger over the Trump administration's tariffs and border policies. The National Travel and Tourism Office released preliminary figures Thursday showing the number of airline and ship passengers who entered the country last month using business visas. The Middle East was the only region that saw higher business travel to the U.S., with arrivals up 9.4% compared to April 2024. That didn't make up for big losses from other regions. The number of business travelers from Western Europe fell 17.7%, for example. The new government data didn't include people coming from Canada for business or who traveled by land from Mexico. Mexican arrivals by air for those holding business visas were down 11.8%, the government said. Overall travel from Canada fell in April. According to Statistics Canada, Canadian residents' return trips by air from the U.S. fell 20% in April, while return trips by car were down 35%. Business travel to the U.S. held up better than leisure travel in the first quarter of the year. According to U.S. government data, more than 1.2 million travelers entered the U.S. using business visas in the January through March period, up 7% from the year before. The number of travelers using tourist visas fell 6%. That flipped in April as the late Easter holiday likely encouraged more leisure travel. Travel to the U.S. by international travelers holding tourist visas was up 13.8% in April. It's unclear if that trend will hold. Cirium, an aviation analytics company, said an analysis of online travel agency data indicated that advanced bookings from Europe to 14 U.S. cities in June, July, and August were down 12% from the same months last year. Several U.S. airlines pulled their financial forecasts for the year, citing uncertainty and weaker demand from lower fare. Leisure travelers. Many industry experts think business travel to the U.S. will continue to decline in coming months. Leslie Andrews, the global travel leader for real estate company JLL and a board member at the Global Business Travel Association Foundation, said she thinks corporate travel to the U.S. will slow in the second and third quarters of the year as the full impact of economic and geopolitical volatility sets in. What I'm hearing is things were good in the first quarter, but in the second quarter, it's a matter of must you take that trip, Andrews said. They're pulling in the reins a bit to make sure only purposeful travel is happening as things grow and evolve. BT4 Europe, a business travel association, said companies are increasingly wary about unpredictable procedures to enter the U.S. and the risk of detention, especially for LGBTQ+ individuals or those who voiced political opinions on social media. Kevin Haggerty usually travels to the United States from Canada several times a year to attend trade shows in Atlanta or Las Vegas or to visit suppliers in Los Angeles. His concerns about crossing the border will keep him from making those trips this year. Haggerty, who owns a company that sells gifts and souvenirs, said Canadian retailers no longer want U.S.-made merchandise. His U.S. suppliers are struggling to stay afloat due to U.S. tariffs on products made in China. Above all, he's concerned about reports of international travelers being detained at the U.S. border. Honestly, my nervousness and reluctance to cross into the U.S. stems from more than any hostility to the American market, the Halifax, Nova Scotia resident said. Global Business Travel Association CEO Suzanne Neufang said a poll of more than 900 of the association's members last month showed nearly one-third expected a decline in global travel volumes this year. Canadian members were the most pessimistic, with 71% saying they expected a decrease in travel this year, she said. A drop-off in business trips would be a setback for the U.S. travel industry and cities that host international conventions and trade shows. The $1.6 trillion global business travel sector was finally returning to normal after the COVID-19 pandemic. U.S. business travel spending reached pre-pandemic levels in 2023. Neufang said while the rest of the world achieved that last year. Brett Sterenson, president of Hotel Lobbyists, a Washington firm that helps book groups into hotels for meetings and conferences, said he lost international business as some countries warned travelers not to visit the U.S. U.S. government cuts are also hurting business, he said. He works with several groups that offer international exchange programs through the State Department, but with funding cuts, that part of his business is down 75%. And there are two color photos, one larger than the other. In the first one, Toronto residents Douglas Bloomfield Wright and his son Phoenix on vacation in Washington hold a Canadian flag on an ice hockey stick March 13th in front of the White House to show their support for Canada regarding tariffs. Ben Curtis, Associated Press. Smaller color photo, it's silhouetted. Travelers check American Airlines flight information screens for their flight status at O'Hare International Airport in Chicago. and they're standing in front of the windows and the screens, and they are silhouetted so we can't see them, but we do see their outlines and their luggage. Nam Wai Hu, Associated Press, photo credit. I don't know if we'll get through all of this, but on the weather page, B8, there's an interesting article. Man goes viral on sailing trip with cat. Jennifer Cinco Kelleher, Associated Press, Honolulu. So I'll read as much as I can. Midway, while sailing across the Pacific with just his cat named Phoenix, Oliver Widger reflected on why he thinks his many followers, more than a million on TikTok and Instagram, are drawn to the story of quitting his 9-to-5 job and embarking on a journey from Oregon to Hawaii. The world kind of sucks, and like, I don't think I'm alone in how I felt with my work, Widger, 29, told the Associated Press on Wednesday via Zoom. You can be making $150,000 a year, and you still feel like you're just making ends meet. You know what I mean? And I think people are just tired of that and working really hard for nothing and want a way out. People are inspired by someone who found a way out, said Widger, who is among a growing number of people who have undertaken such voyages in recent years. Being diagnosed 4 years ago with a syndrome that carried a risk of paralysis made him realize he hated his job as a manager at a tire company, a job requiring him to be clean-shaven and wear pressed shirts. He heard about people who sailed from California to Hawaii and decided that was the life for him. He abruptly quit his job with no money, no plan, and $10,000 of debt. I knew one thing. I'm buying a sailboat, he recalled. I'm sailing around the world. He liquidated his retirement savings, taught himself to sail mostly via YouTube, and moved from Portland to the Oregon coast, where he spent months refitting the $50,000 boat he bought. Now Widger is harnessing the power of social media to fund his round-the-world sailing dream. Since he set sail in April, followers have been tuning in to his Sailing with Phoenix social media post to view videos of him and his feline first mate battling the waves and bouts of seasickness, enjoying dazzling sunsets, recounting tricky boat repairs, or just reflecting on life at sea. As he discussed his journey with the AP, a netted bag carrying bottled water and snacks swung wildly over his head as the boat rocked. He recalled highlights of the voyage so far, including marveling at the speed dolphins cut through the water and finding flying fish on the deck. There have been stretches where there were no birds in sight for days. It can be a struggle to sleep when the boat is creaking while being buffeted by waves, or to be steady, a boiling pot for the MREs he has been subsisting on. There have been harrowing moments, like when a rudder failed and the boat tilted sideways in the surf for 3 hours as he made repairs, and the time he locked himself in the engine compartment and pried his way out with a wrench. Widger acknowledged he is relatively inexperienced as a sailor, but he has implemented safety measures and communication package backup plans, including a satellite phone and an emergency beacon. Lieutenant Commander Jesse Harms of the U.S. Coast Guard in Hawaii hasn't been following the journey closely, but said he is relieved to hear Widger has the emergency position indicating radio beacon, known as an EPIRB. It's a critical tool for rescuers to locate a mariner's position during an emergency, especially in the Pacific, the largest ocean, Harms said. Widger's journey provides a good opportunity to educate the public about sailing safety, such as the importance of wearing a personal flotation device whenever topside on the boat, monitoring the weather closely, and registering emergency tools like the EPIRB, Harms said. That's a really critical piece for anybody that's getting motivated by this story to go off on their own adventure, Harm said. Well, as we are running out of time for this first half hour, just a quick read of the caption and the photo of the cat Phoenix in this photo provided by Oliver Widger via his Instagram account on May 15th. His cat Phoenix sits inside their sailboat somewhere in the Pacific Ocean as both make their way from Oregon to Hawaii. And Phoenix is a multicolored tabby cat looking very content. And photo credit is Oliver Widger Photos. That brings us to the end of the first half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, May 20th, 2025. We'll take a short break and return with the second half hour.